Podcasting 2.0 for February 13th, 2026, episode 250, Dopaminergic. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the big show. It's time once again to bring you the board meeting of Podcasting 2.0. It's where all the cool kids hang out. It's not a lot of us, but we are incredibly cool. I'm Adam Curry right here in the heart of the... Oh, wait a minute, I forgot to tell you. This is a boardroom that doesn't stop for slop. I'm Adam Curry here in the heart of the Texas Hill Country. And in Alabama, the man who is using AI to fight AI. Say hello to my friend on the other end, the one, the only, Mr. Dave Jones.
Yes, fight slop with slop.
Fighting slop with slop, baby. It's all you can do.
Yeah, it's like a. It's like when they shoot slop at you, you hold up one of those U-shaped tubes with, and so it goes in the top and then comes right back out the back. You know, at the bottom towards the.
It's like a periscope that shoots back at you, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
I can't get logged into.
You can't get logged into the chat?
No, to X.
To X?
Twitter.
Oh, wow.
To do the tweet. Does it even matter anymore?
I think it does. I always posted there to make sure people know that, you know, where to. Yeah, I think it's a signaling mechanism. I think it's presence. It's your presence. I got, I don't know what happened. But I got tired of people sending me Instagram links and then clicking. You know, I had a phone. I dropped my phone.
Like, oh, yeah. So, wait, are you recovered from this?
Yes, I'm recovered. But when you drop, okay. I had one of those Galaxy Flip Z phones.
Mm-hmm.
And, which, you know, it's pretty protected, but it was open and I'm outside. And of course I'm doing two things at once, which I shouldn't have done. It's my own fault. And so I'm grilling. I flip the phone out of my other hand. It goes up probably taller than I am. So let's just say almost 7 feet. Comes down, face down, on the corner, on the concrete. I'm like, nah, it's not going to survive. And it didn't. Which is interesting because, you know, the flip screen, it actually broke right on the left-hand side where the hinge is. Because the screen itself doesn't break. It's just whatever is behind it. That just, you know, that's probably even worse. It just, you know, and then the screen's all flickering. Top half works and the bottom half and then nothing works. It still has a front screen, but you can't really do much with it. And this is before I had to go on the road. I was taking a trip like, oh man, this sucks so bad.
Was it right as you were getting ready to leave?
Yeah. So I got the old Graphene OS phone, which, you know, is my backup and it worked, but you know, then you realize, oh wow, this is so slow compared to the Galaxy. And of course, no RCS, text messages. So I all of these threads that I'm on, nope, not on them anymore.
No, yeah, because Signal wigs out if you change phones. It does not like that at all.
This is just text messaging.
Mm.
You know, because all the iPhone people, they already have their iMessage and they begrudgingly comply with RCS.
But yeah, then you're the green bubble in their chat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm the green bubble, but when I drop off, it doesn't say, oh, Adam's now on SMS. You know, it doesn't do any of that. So that was actually quite nice because it was kind of quiet.
an unintentional break.
Yeah, that was nice and quiet, so I kind of enjoyed that.
I've been leaving my. I haven't been pod fasting, but I've been like, reading more, and just leaving the earbuds out.
Oh, okay, boomer.
Not 24/7. No, boomers. No, man. Boomers are, they are wired in. They are not. Boomers are just, they're like always online.
They can't get enough. Yeah, they are. So let me just finish the story.
Yes, sir.
So, I think I had Instagram I don't like to use apps, you know, certainly not for Twitter or for Instagram. I don't have Facebook. That's all I really had. I only have Instagram. Basically to see how my daughter's doing. And so, you know, I was on the new desktop Linux and I've got the Surface on Linux. And so I'm kind of on Linux and this other phone, you know, is broken. And then I got tired doing show prep. People send me Instagram, you know, and then you got to click away the join Instagram so you can see what they sent you. And then you got to quickly hit the speaker icon so you can actually make, you know, record the clip. It's like, well, I'll just log back in. Well. No, that password's not right. And I think I saw like a password recovery a couple of weeks ago and just ignored it. You know, it says if this isn't you, just ignore it.
Okay.
And so now it's, it says, no, this is wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong. Now my account is still there. It's not hacked as far as I can tell. But at a certain point it says, well, you have to restore your password. You have to do this from a device that you had Instagram on before. Okay. But what they really mean is on a device that you had the Instagram app on before.
Which you don't have.
Which, right? I never had. And so now they're saying, we're sorry, it's not safe to restore your account. Okay.
Oh, so you're just toast.
I'm locked out. Yeah.
That's great. That's actually good.
Yeah. And I'm like, should I do something about this? Nah, not really. I really don't feel like it. It's fine. It's good that way.
Instagram, if you don't have the app, is 12 layers of dark patterns to try to get you to download the app.
Oh, yeah. By the way, yes, Dreb, you're correct. I know my daughter is alive because we share the poop app. I'm in her poop app league. So, yes.
Poop app? What is
it? Oh, the poop app? Oh, the poop app. Oh, this is great. Oh, you need this. You need this in your life. So it's actually called Poop Map. And the idea is every time you poop, you drop your poop and then it registers it where you did it, and you get badges, awards.
Why?
Oh, well, hold on a second. I have a lot of incredible badges. I have, let me see. What are my badges? I've got.
Is there a badge for like corn?
No, they don't have that, but you do have a badge for like pooping on an airplane, pooping in an airport, pooping under sea level. I have all these badges. This is very good.
Under sea level. So that means the poop has to go uphill.
Well, you have to be
to get to where it's.
No, you literally. Well, technically, I guess. Yes. And so my daughter has this with her friends, maybe 10 friends, and they're all, you know, in their 30s. So these are adults. And like, yeah, dad, you got to be in our league. Okay. And so the idea is you poop and then you put a funny little line, you know, like a classic would be, I just dropped the kids off at the pool. But of course you get very creative with this because that's not a good one. But the bottom line is if you haven't seen someone in the league poop for a day or two, you check in on them. You all right?
You constipated?
Yeah. You doing okay?
Yeah. Back off on the cheese. No more cheese. You know, this is I don't know what to think about humanity. I was already pretty down on it, but now this is terrible.
Well, and these are kids who are real. They're really not. They're not on social media. Well, Christina does some social media because she gets paid influencer like stuff. Yeah, and you know, by the way, she's now 18 weeks pregnant. So, so she's getting free baby stuff, and that's good.
This is a very popular app in San Francisco. I'm imagining this, the poop app. This is like do you have to like rate it? I mean, do you have to put like a Bristol scale?
No, you can, you can rate your poop. But you know, okay. I mean, seriously, it really is. Let me just give you a little overview.
It's got in-app purchase for what?
Yeah. So here's from the league. Let's see. Winnie the Pooh read the news. Commented. Oh, that's on my snooze. Just finished their personal detoxification program. Finished their meditation in the Oval Office. Just released some underwater smoke rings. You know, busted a grumpy. Now there's one. I've never heard of busting a grumpy.
Oh man, yeah. Like RPPs purchase toilet paper. That's like in-app partnerships.
No, I don't know.
We've partnered with Cottonelle.
They have not tried to sell me anything. So
busted a grumpy.
That may be a show title right there. I think we're talking show title material. That's perfect.
This is the worst thing I've ever seen.
No, it's not. So, but that was easy to reinstall. Actually, so, So, you know, when you do iPhones, I guess, are pretty good about restoring when you get a new iPhone.
Is that the first app that you put back on the
phone? No. Let me tell you the process. Let me tell you the process. So iPhones, you know, you store everything on the cloud and you buy a new iPhone. It all comes back to life. Poof. Although not entirely, because you've got to log into everything and, you know, all kinds of stuff. But with Samsung, they have something called Samsung Switch. Switch. Yeah, I think it's Switch. And so you load that on both phones, Smart Switch, that's what it's called. And you put the phones together and it will, via Bluetooth, it'll replicate your phone onto the new phone. So the old phone, and this is kind of a cool benefit. It has DeX. Are you familiar with DeX?
Never heard of it.
DeX?
No.
So in these Samsungs, you can plug a keyboard into it and a mouse and a HDMI all on a hub. And you just have a full screen. You have your phones, you know, on a monitor, and you can use a mouse and type. So that obviously still worked, even though the screen was broken. And so I could do the transfer, but oh man, so much goes wrong with that.
I'm guessing it's just half bringing things over.
It brings everything over, but yeah, not really. Apps are kind of there. Things kind of got restored, and I really don't care. I just want to be able to text, do Signal, WhatsApp, because that's what all the Europeans use. And Obsidian, that's it. Obsidian's my jam. I live in Obsidian. Thank you very much, Alex Gates.
I've been hearing a lot of people use Obsidian. Mm-hmm. This is just a brain mapping thing, right?
No.
Or a mind map, I think.
No, I use it as an outline, and you can use it in many different ways, and it's completely scriptable. So an example, every day it has a new folder before the, you know, it's like a year, month, day. And I use a markdown widget on the browser. So if I see an article that I want to save, then I just hit that little widget and it will save the title and the URL. And on desktop, it'll actually save a markdown version of the page, and it saves it in that folder. It's all marked. The whole thing is based on markdown files, which is handy. And, you know, even like if I get something from Gemini, I have a prompt that says put it into an Obsidian template. It does tags and all the stuff I need to just have a database, you know, a knowledge base of stuff, and I can search it and I can organize it. And so when it comes to show day, regardless of what show it is, I'll check on the tags because I mark all the different shows I do with tags. And then I drag it into a show folder with topics. And then I have a script which will export it to OPML. And I can import that right into the Freedom controller.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, okay. It is. It really is nice. But you can then also, if you want, you can turn it into mind mapping. And I don't use that. I just use it as an outliner knowledge-based storage system. And it syncs between all my devices. I live in that. I just absolutely write down a note, boom, got it. Because you can find it. You can really find stuff.
Yeah, I probably need to look at this because this would be helpful.
Alex Gates turned me on to it.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, because I was using something else that came with, I keep forgetting the name, not the Start 9, but your
Umbral.
Umbral, yeah. Umbral had an app, forget what it was. Mm-hmm. It's in the app store there. And I was using that, and then, you know, the Umbral kept blowing up. I'm like, oh, this is no good. It was kind of wonky. And then Alex Gates told me about Obsidian, and ever since I got Obsidian, like, oh, man, I love this. This thing is awesome. It really is.
Huh.
My whole life is in it. You can put code in it, code blocks.
Code? Really?
Yeah, code blocks. Yeah. It's Markdown, so yeah. Hello.
Yeah. Okay.
Hello.
Okay. Yeah.
Hello. In case you didn't know, I'm a software developer now. I want to remind you, sorry. We are running on Linux once again. I'd like to point out that I've done two no agendas on the on my playout system, all on Linux,
and no problems. Everything
well, once
good?
I load, you were so right about the Surface.
Oh, it blew up. I knew it.
No, it didn't blow up. But yeah, obviously the. When I was, you know, it didn't do very well because that was the first test we did 2 weeks ago. And, you know, I literally like switched to a different workspace and it froze everything and the whole thing was a mess. So I had a Dell, one of those, you know, that was on the oil rig that I was gifted.
Yeah. And that you moved everything over to?
Yeah, the Optima, whatever it is, Optima, Optiplex something. So I just built a whole new machine, put everything on, runs like a train. This thing is, it's fantastic. It's just, I love it. And out of nowhere, up pops JB, Jonathan, and he says, hey, I heard you were looking for something to record and to clip with. Because I was complaining about, you know, this really not being any, you know, Audacity. I wound up using Tenacity.
Is that a real thing?
Tenacity is a fork of Audacity. It's more stable, actually. It's more stable. It's okay, but it doesn't have any of the shuttling. You know, the HJKL keys, the in and out. You know, just for fast clipping. He says, "Well, I heard he's a professional software developer." He says, "You know, I was listening to what you were talking about, and he said, you know, I have a mission this year." And the mission is I want to build very small things that people need that have a very specific function. And he said, so I've built something for you. And he says, I'm a software developer, but I've vibe coded this. And I think we've done a couple iterations in the past week. This thing is outrageous.
Oh, really? And,
I'm going to post the link in the boardroom so I can say. It's called Clip Doctor.
Okay, so it's open source.
Open source. And this is so beautiful. You know, I had to do some, had to complete some videos for Godcaster Help videos. And you just type in the Gemini. Okay, I need a screen recorder. Boom, try this. All right, I need some editing software. Boom, try this. All open source. All better than all the Windows stuff I've purchased or worse, have to have a subscription to. I love open source. I love it. It's so good. Okay. And everyone's friendly. And yeah, we can fix that. We can change this. Or you can do it yourself. This Clip Doctor thing is phenomenal. I'm recording with it right now. And you can set... it has Whisper built in. You can even set
For transcripts.
Mm-hmm. You can even set trigger words while you're recording. So really? if during the recording I had... You know, it was looking for a trigger word like, clip this! Or whatever. then it would automatically set a marker. Once you're done recording, obviously, because it has to do the transcription, does it all in the device on your own system. It's badass. It really is.
Okay. Clip Doctor. I'm trying to, what is it? It's multi-platform. It looks like,
I think it will Windows, be, Linux. It will be. Okay. It's right now. I think only Linux is available.
It's a GUI or is it command line?
It's GUI. Yeah, hold on a second. I can.
What's it using? I wonder.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I can show you. A screenshot of. Well, the recording screenshot isn't all that sexy because it's just. You know, it's just recording. It doesn't show you the timelines or anything. Here you go. Mm-hmm. This is the. So there it is, and you can see the trigger. The trigger phrases, I can hit the mark button if I want to. It's got, you know, obviously it's doing a waveform in real time. But it all these little idiosyncrasies. Like if you have a full clip, like a 3-minute clip, and I wanna pull out one particular piece, set your in point, set your out point, press C, clip, it puts it on the timeline as a separate clip. It has silence removal, completely customizable, which I spend a lot of time on removing silence from particularly news clips from France 24. And when they have like long shots of nothing, like take that out. I just want to hear the audio. Does that automatically, has processing built in. It's just amazing, amazing. And this is, and the point being that this vibe coding is really enabling some productivity. None of this, I could not have gotten any of this stuff anywhere without the vibe coding. Of course, all morning Gemini was down, which was fun because I had some bugs I wanted to fix. yeah. 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 It wasn't working. So I just took the code, put it into, into Grok. Hey, Grok, fix this. Okay, done. Small little thing.
It's, you know, there's endless AI coding discussions on, you know, tech podcasts and that kind of thing.
Of course.
And I'm pretty, you know, like, I think one thing I'm concerned about is like the mental health issue of AI coding. I've been thinking about this a lot.
The mental health issue.
Yeah. And, I've just been noticing it with me that, let me see where to, like how to frame this. So there was a time when I was young. Young men are prone to video game addiction. Mm-hmm. That's just a thing. Most people understand this. There's a really good article. I'm going to see if I can find it. There's a really good article. I think it was like in the Miami Herald or something, maybe 10 years ago. It's in my Freedom Controller somewhere. I need to find it. But there's this article from a while back where this guy was kind of digging into why young men become so easily addicted to video games. And his basic thesis was that, let me back up. He said, he was pondering it because he said, if you look at video games, especially the ones that are the worst are like RPGs.
Sure.
And he's like, if you look at them, what you see as is sort of like an outside observer watching this 20-year-old male, you know, just spend 10 hours a day playing this RPG video game. What you see is it looks a lot like work. You know, it looks like a job. They're having to go over here and, you know, grind and kill some enemies over here in order to get this item to drop, in order to take it over to this other person in the game, in order to buy this thing that they need to satisfy this quest. And it's like, it's just a whole lot of shuffling things from point A to point B. And it, from the outside, it just looks like work. And so your thought immediately is, well, why is that fun? You know, I mean, like, aren't you supposed to like leave work? You know, isn't this supposed to be the entertainment away from work? And, you know, his thesis then was, well, it is work, but it's a way and which, you know, men are wired for. They're wired for work, but this is a short circuiting of the normal process of work. It's a way to go. It's a way to feel like you're doing work, but getting in very short, very quick reward cycles out of it, because you don't have to work for, you don't have to delay gratification and work for, and invest a lot of effort into this long term goal or a longer term project. What you end up with is this thing tells you to do a thing and five minutes or 5 seconds later, you've done it. And you get this dopamine hit that short circuits the normal process of a reward for a hard day's work. And I feel like there's that element in vibe coding.
Well, that's interesting. Allow me to project that onto myself.
Uh-huh.
So this is all I've done is all for work. It's my job. I'm a podcaster. I have gotten incredible satisfaction, not only out of building this, and I'm very able now to set it aside and go like, okay, I'll finish this tomorrow or whenever I have time. Because you just open up the session and boom, you're right back. And I have time to think about it. I'm like, how do I want that? You know, but the actual, I've really gotten satisfaction from my work itself by using the tools that I've created or co-created. So if you're doing something for your work, I find it very gratifying. I have 100 more ideas of things that I can do for work. In this case, for Godcaster, I have a whole idea for, you know, how churches can program their 24/7 streaming systems. Mm-hmm. You know, I built it in the old school way with grids and formats. Like, huh, well, am I crazy? Mm-hmm. This is going to be supercharged. I know exactly what I want it to do. And I'm just spending maybe a week or two formulating in my mind and writing stuff down how I want it to work. The satisfaction is enormous, but it's actually for work. I'm not a video gamer. So do you find that when, for instance, you put together this, which I like a lot, the new feeds report on the podcast index, public.podcastindex.org/report.html.
There's actually a different, it's under a different URL. Now let me paste that in the board
room. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so this is a placeholder. We can talk about that in a minute.
Right, but that you vibe coded some of this at least.
Oh, I mean, it was one prompt. I mean, it took me 10 seconds. Yes, it was absolutely zero work at all. And I think it's not, you know, listening to what you were saying about the production that you've enabled with your vibe coding, I think it's not an either or. I think it's a both. Mm-hmm. I think what's happening is incredible gains in productivity and just honestly creation is happening.
Yes, creation. Yes.
It's an explosion of creation is happening. And that stands on its own as a benefit. And then, but I think it carries along with it this other thing that's sort of like a payload. So I was reading, last night I was reading Wendell Berry, his book, Life is a Miracle, an essay on modern superstition. It's an incredibly good book. It's not very long, but it does require you to, it's hard to read it quickly because you find that that every paragraph, sometimes literally every paragraph, makes you have to stop and think. It's just kind of really pushing a lot of ideas into a small amount of words. Mm-hmm. And so I can't get through it very fast. So I was read for an hour or so last night. And he makes this one comment. He says mechanical efficiency always externalizes its inefficiencies. So you could think of, like, you know, for instance, I mean, just think about a tailpipe coming out of a car. I mean, mechanical efficiency is always going to externalize the inefficient parts of itself. So there's a bunch of crap and heat coming out of that tailpipe. That's the stuff it couldn't handle. Mm-hmm. That's the output that is not processing.
Sure.
But it needed to generate in order to do its job. And so I think that the payload that comes along with AI coding is the AI's inefficiency is us. We are the tailpipe.
Yeah. Okay. Keep going. I think I'm going to disagree, but keep going.
And so, like, some, you know, you can imagine he makes another point later on. He says, he's talking about discovery, and he makes this point. He's trying to make this point of some things are better left undiscovered. He says every discovery, and he's kind of comparing, different things. Every discovery has like two sides of its story. You know, you have the Spanish explorers, their side of the story on one end, and then, you know, the New World native inhabitants on their end, and they tell a very different story about this same thing. And so like I said, I don't think that there is one story to tell here. I think it's both. And I think we're going to have to learn how to deal with the the output of this thing, if that output ends up being something internal to us. Because what I have felt, I've been vibe coding and stuff occasionally and using code agents for a few weeks now. And what I find in myself is that I get this sort of like dopaminergic.
What's that word?
Like a dopamine.
Yeah, yeah. But what is the word? What is the word you use? Dopa what?
Dopaminergic.
Dopaminergic. I like that.
I get this sort of almost mental mania at times, because what, like one of the things I was doing, I have very specific use cases for when I use coding agents. I'm trying to. It's hard to even outline what they are, but I immediately, like, there's certain things I just do not use them for at all, ever. So other things, I use it 100% and never even look at the code. Like with that HTML report thing, it's like, I don't care, throw away, whatever. And so I've got this range of uses. And one of the things I was doing the other day was, I had a web app that is slow only because it deals with a whole lot of data on the page at one time. And when you get a humongous HTML table, the browser really struggles with that. The DOM starts to chug, and it's just not a very good use case. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to turn this into a Qt native app, and it'll be able to load faster. It'll be in C++. This will be great.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a use case I barely even care about, so I don't care what the code even looks like, as long as it works. And I'm going through, and I'm just chugging along, and it's building everything perfectly. I mean, it's just like it's wonderful what it's putting out. But then I'm like, add another feature, add another feature, add another feature, and I keep going and going and going and going and going.
Yes.
And I look down. And
welcome,
I look down.
Welcome to my world, Dave.
And this is what I mean. This is the dopamine that is taking over. It doesn't mean that any of it was somehow negative for what it did or created, but it gives me a very uncomfortable feeling of, I'm just going to kill one more enemy in this video game before I go to bed. Okay, just one more. Okay, just one more. I feel like there is a certain type of technical oriented person, I may be prone to this. It gives me an uncomfortable feeling.
Well, hold on a second, because we talked about this when I first started my vibe coding journey. It's a journey.
Tell me your vibe coding story.
I'm telling you here's my vibe coding testimony. We talked about this, and I think with developers in general, it's like, I'm just going to build it one more time before I go to bed. Let me just check it one more time. So yes. It's not like it's, so it may enhance that. But that has always been there.
You feel like, what AI coding agents bring to the table is a feeling that you are being incredibly productive. And so, because in a lot of times you're being so productive that it makes you think I'm almost finished. I'm almost finished. It's like when you have more, you want more, and it's pushing you sometimes unwillingly to continue when you should stop. And I think, like I said, none of this means that it's bad or any of that thing. It's really, there's no judgment here. I think that I've become aware of it, especially in the last maybe week or so, because I've been doing less of it. I've actually been writing a lot of code by hand the last week, and I feel myself like relaxing and coming back out of that mental mania.
Hmm.
And I've actually felt reluctant to pull up the Claude command line. And I did, you know, I did today just to knock out that report thing. And it was like, okay, it just feels good to be back in just in the IDE looking at your code, and you feel like your mind has a chance to like think through a topic. And so I think this is all just so new that we don't understand yet how to make it all work mentally with ourselves.
I can completely agree with that. What I found very satisfying, because I've had a whole experience here. I switched to Omarchi with a tiling window manager, use of workspaces. You know, this is what I do. I sit behind my computer and I have email and I've got all these different sources and I'm categorizing stuff. And so I am, on one hand, optimizing processes that I already had. I wouldn't know how to write an Obsidian script that could output to OPML in the proper OPML, because of course there's OPML and OPML that the Freedom Controller can ingest. And then, well, I want to set my monitor color just, you know, the warmth of it just so. And so I've got my, and I don't have any agents or anything. I literally just have Gemini browser. And you know, another thing, I just do a super key tab Gemini and it pops up. You know, it's a web app. And I can customize my entire workflow, my life. But I'm not obsessed with it. It's just, and maybe that's because I had so many bad experiences with vibe coding for the first 6 months, where just getting something to work and then, you know, these stupid models taking me all the way down the rabbit hole to you have to recompile your kernel. So that's kind of gone. It doesn't do that anymore. Yeah. So I can see the improvement. And now just as a non-coding person who understands systems, because I do understand systems, particularly Unix systems, it's a joy. You know, I just the other day I was like, you know, I've always, and for no agenda, I have to have a non-recoup partner expenses report. And the way that works with an LLC is, you know, there's a lot of stuff you can deduct by saying, well, this was a business expense. I paid for it myself. And then you send that to the accountant, and then the accountant will deduct that from the money that you've been paid. So that becomes your new taxable base. You still paid for it, but you don't have to pay taxes over it. That's basically how it works. And that's why LLCs are very popular. I don't have to tell you that. You know what I'm talking about. So I was thinking, instead of what I always do is, oh, here comes QuickBooks. And, you know, it's like, and I have to connect all of my my credit card, my bank account, PayPal. I got to connect it all to QuickBooks. And then QuickBooks is maintaining, you know, what I have marked as a certain type of expense. So what if I just, now please leave the dumbness out of this of putting my personal data into an LLM. Leave that out of it for a second.
I mentally chose to ignore this.
Okay, please ignore that. What if I just said, hey, these are the categories. Here's last year's stuff. Create a new report for me. But I think with 90% certainty, it will generate something that I can use and it will save me a week.
Yeah.
This is, and so now I'm just in this creative mode of like, wow, how can I optimize the rest? If I can win 4 days of my life for 20 bucks a month, yahoo.
Yeah.
But that's not an obsession or like gaming to me. So I can't approach it because I've always considered writing code to be an art. It's not science, it's an art. It's like poetry. It's like music. You can approach things from 1,000 different directions. And I think you kind of build it the way I've seen it is it creates along the way. Musicians are always great software engineers, I found, particularly drummers and bass players for some reason. And, you know, that you get into that mode of thing is, you know, and the further you go, it just starts to get better and better, and then you put in your quality of life enhancements. It's a very creative process, and I've now been let into that with the creative part, but not really, because it's still the AI is still taking an approach that I really don't even know what it's doing. I just see the output of it. So there are a lot of things I may not do or find or may miss because I'm not actually in the code. But it is mind-blowingly creative and fun to me. But not like I'm not video games. You know, I'm not a doom scroller. I don't have that kind of nature. So I'm doing almost a 180 on this stuff, but not from the, well, this, you know, whoever's going to win the AI race, yeah, good luck. I'm going to stand outside these data centers in a year and just pick me up some NVIDIA cards because, you know, they'll have to get rid of them. And they'll just run the stuff at home. Okay, my models will be a year behind. A year from now, if I can get what I have now at home, hallelujah.
Well, AI coding to me is fundamentally different than the entire rest of AI anything. Because it's verifiable. It's not the general knowledge problem is that's a joke. I still think AI is completely just overblown in that whole sphere. But the fact, if you can break down things into small enough pieces.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. What just happened here?
Well, you're going nuts over there.
What happened? I don't know what happened.
Is this your vibe coding, vibe coded?
I don't know where that came from. I have no idea. Where did that? What was that? No, I don't know where that came from. It did not. It's doing stuff by itself.
For a second.
I hit something, but I don't know what I hit.
You got to turn off ClaudeBot during the show.
I do. I am not running ClaudeBot, but I totally intend on running it. Totally.
But I think. It's just a different sort of thing. I mean, like I said, I don't think at this point in the game we have any answers. That's the thing is, I don't think.
Well, how about
I
this?
I think it's too early. It would be like asking in 2005, what is social media gonna do to society? It's an unanswerable question. You just don't know.
Just so you know, DARPA was already analyzing what social media would do in the 70s. They were already running models, not exactly the way we see it today, but there's a ton of research they did. And I think they really like what they see today because, man, you can program people's brains with that stuff. It's amazing. It's amazing.
So easily. Yeah, straight into the cerebellum or whatever.
Yes, it's amazing. All of these models, if from what I understand, they focus heavily, heavily on coding. And they've done that for a couple of reasons. One, I think syntax. Code, if it's either write or it doesn't run. You know, it can run and do stuff you don't want it to, but syntax is incredibly critical with code. One curly brace. So that helps them create machinery, I'll just call it machinery, that does good syntax no matter what it's doing. They also wanted to be able to, I guess, have these things build. And I think it's probably true that internally at Anthropic, you know, Claude, it's building its own stuff. I'm sure it is.
Sure.
I don't know how that will translate to all these other so-called white-collar jobs it's going to wipe out. And again, you can code something, but you have to know some basics. It has to be in something that you really understand and are interested in. You can't just, you know, grab your Mac and say, okay, I'm going to build this. I just don't think it's going to work that well, except for maybe something that runs on your machine only, and you might get something out of it.
I mean, you're not a developer, but the reason you've had so much success with it is because you have been around computers at a deep level for
a long
40
time.
Years.
Yeah, a long time. Yeah.
And so you just understand. I mean, you were running Sun Spark stations back, you know, in the
80s. Yeah, baby. Spark 3. A headless Spark 3, actually.
this is knowledge that the average person just does not have. And you have to know something in order to know what to even say, because the outcomes between saying, you know, build me something that does so and so versus write a class that accepts these parameters and takes in, you know, and
right.
And allows that is a completely different outcome.
Yeah.
So if you have some knowledge about the way to structure things, you're just going to be way more successful. And like, I think that that's what we're, I think that's really where this thing is going, is that it's going to, and this is what Jason told me Jason Hudgens, when he first said, "Hey, give me 30 minutes of your time on a Zoom session and I'll show you how to do all this stuff." And he, you know, his words to me was, you know, if you don't know what you're doing, it's you're going to get mad results. But if you are an experienced developer, it'll turn you into a superhero.
Hmm.
And that's the thing. And it's also, I think it's probably revealing that most of the code that we use on a daily basis the code structure itself doesn't really matter. We get pedantic as developers and as systems people that we really want this structure of things to be the right way. We want a perfect design. And there are times when that is very important.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go behind the curtain and look at what's actually running on any of the platforms that you're using, there's going to be a certain percentage of those that are just a complete and utter mess.
Yeah, of course.
But they still actually produce the outcome that the output you need. And so it doesn't really matter a lot of the time. And like, so I mean, it's a good time to talk about this feed report if you're good with it.
Yes, you have a bug in it, by the way.
Oh yeah. I'm sure. Yeah.
The estimate, what is it? Estimated legitimate. It's not giving me a percentage. It's giving me looks like you screwed up a curly brace somewhere.
It wasn't me. Don't blame me. I just wrote English. It wrote the code.
So, okay. So this is interesting. This report. So I see total new feeds, and this is the last 24 hours, 2,592, 2,139 estimated legitimate, suspected spam of gambling, 13.4%, possibly AI generated, 3.5%, seems low. SEO affiliate spam, 1.8%. And you have a nice report where it's all coming from. How are you determining the spam, gambling, AI-generated SEO affiliate stuff? Is that based upon some of the feedback we've already created with the podcast index monitor?
So not yet. Okay. So this is completely just a placeholder AI. I mean, now it's using real data and it's doing some stuff.
Yeah.
But it's really, this is a placeholder for, I'm trying to build out the pipeline here. You know, this feeds into this, which feeds into this, which does this. And so this was literally like a one sentence prompt. I just said,
wow.
I said, consume I wish I had even saved the prompt, but,
I'm sure it's in your session somewhere. Don't you have a session?
Oh, do I? Maybe. I think let's see.
Session.md.
See, Claude. How do I log? Oh, Google. Yeah, I think I can log in with Google here. Maybe I can go find it. What I told it essentially, if I can't find this, was download the file at this URL, which is public.podcastindex.org/newly-added-feeds-24-hours.csv. So that CSV file gets generated once a day.
Hmm.
And it's simply just the last 24 hours worth of newly added feeds that have come into the index from any place.
Mm-hmm.
And so the layout of that file is, it just tries to give all the fields the purpose of this is I want other people to be able to do whatever they want with it. I want people to be able to slice and dice this data however
sure,
they want.
Sure.
And so it has a bunch of just standard fields like the podcast index ID, the feed URL, the title, the author, the description, the full text of the description tag. It's got the image URL, the hosting company, the top level domain of the hosting company. So like Spreaker.com, Transistor.fm, Captivate.fm, blah, blah, blah. The time the feed was added, and then the source of where it came from. Oh, how did it come to be in the index? Was it through Podping?
Mm-hmm.
Was it through did somebody add it using the API? We also look for misses. So if somebody searches for something using a feed URL or an iTunes ID and we see that we do not have it in the index, we will add it after the fact. So search is a possible source. So that's it. So it just dumps all that data into a CSV for the last 24 hours. That's really going to be your main point of output for this thing. So then we already have the command line tool where you can mark feeds as certain, you know, types of stuff. You can say, well, it's a duplicate, or it's AI slop, or it's spam, and that kind of thing. And so you can mark it that way. What I would like to do is not that we're going to start necessarily removing things, but I'm less interested in removing things as I am in becoming better at classifying what these things actually are. So if there was 2,592 feeds in the last 24 hours, without making any judgments about any of the content of any of these feeds, I think it's really would be important for all of us to know that X number of them are gambling sites.
Mm-hmm.
Well, once you know that, then you can start to make a machine learning model off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can analyze as you go forward, you can analyze, okay, well, how many of this next batch is gambling sites? How many of this next batch is SEO affiliate spam? And then you can say, okay, based on that analysis, looking back, how many of the previous ones that were classified in this certain way, how many of those ended up being removed, and when and how fast were they removed? Because what I'm doing right now is I'm just brain dumping out a lot of the knowledge that I've acquired over the last, you know, 5.5 years
sure,
of doing this.
Sure.
And one of the points that you can see very, very clearly is that trial mode and free account spam is where a lot of this stuff comes from on the paid hosting providers that do not have a free tier. So you see, for instance, like somebody will sign up temporarily for a, you know, Buzzsprout or an RSS.com. They'll sign up for that trial period, and it's just as SEO affiliate spam.
Mm-hmm.
and Transistor and these guys. And so they're having to constantly fight this and by going in and nuking these feeds, because these people never have any intention of actually using the system correctly or paying or anything like that. They're purely trying to get SEO links. So what that looks like from the point perspective of the index is it looks like those hosting companies will get, you'll get a feed will pop up, and then like within 48 hours, it's gone. It's at 404s. So that tells you, you know, before the trial period elapsed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good indicator that that thing was found to be problematic on the host. So then we can use that information. We can say, okay, here are the qualities of that particular podcast feed. Here's the properties it had. And then looking back in time, podcasts that also had those particular markers, they were rapidly removed from the host.
Wow.
So then you can say, okay.
This is good. Yeah. This is deep. I like it.
Yeah. So then you can flag them. And it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to remove them, because we really don't want to get the censorship thing going. Or not, it's not even what it is, but I'm just uncomfortable us making those decisions. But we can, if you have a flag on there that says this meets the criteria for what we've seen rapidly removed in the past, then we can stick those in a separate box and begin to quickly check them over and over and over, you know, and basically keep an eye on them and feed that data back to the hosting companies themselves. And that's the ultimate goal, really. That's really what I want to do. What I was wanting to do, the real goal of this ultimately is to do an analysis of the data as it comes in and then feed that back to the hosting companies through some sort of
AI talking to AI.
Some kind of dashboard or just API endpoint where they can see feeds that we have determined that they have removed in the past, and they can see them, and then that may make it easier for them to take action on it rather than having to waste their time manually searching and always trying to find these feeds that people are abusing their system. So that's the goal. So this first is get the output ready, which is what the CSV file is. Then, and we've already got the sort of like human curated flag part thing. We've got that built, and nobody's really using it really. But then if we, feed that data through and then start to collect the 404s afterwards. And I forgot to mention that part of this is the podcasts themselves. I'm saving the XML of these 404 podcasts in object storage so that we can go back and we can have them in perpetuity. So we can always go back and see what that thing looked like to train. So we can always train on that data, even if the 404 is gone.
And while you're doing all this, it seems like a very good way to build some kind of search system that everybody can tap into.
What do you mean?
I mean, if
you mean like the one that I broke the other day?
Yeah, I'm just seeing an opportunity here. I'm not sure how. it's probably a token burner, but it seems like there is a way to create an API with all kinds of mumbo jumbo on the back end. Because if we can determine if something's affiliate spam or slop or whatever, you know, there are also transcripts available that can be read. So when someone says, hey, I'm really looking for a podcast about this, 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 and this. Mm-hmm. If we're already doing all this work, is there a way to maintain some of this knowledge that we create and expand it? So not just get a bicycle racing podcast from the title and the description, but from more?
Isn't that the thing that the MCP server that was created the other day isn't that kind of what he's trying to do?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know if the MCP is caching stuff, and I have no idea. Mm-hmm. It just feels like, you know, if there's a discoverability, hey, you like this podcast, you'll probably like this podcast.
Oh, I see.
Which is one of the holy grails of podcasting that we've never achieved.
That goes back to the whole issue of podcasts not having a way to make those linkages between, like, you know, 'cause what Google does is, you know, backlinks, and the podcasts don't have that linkage between them. That's the major way that you find,
right,
things that go together. Because you can, otherwise you're trying to use heuristics.
Yeah, that's hard.
And heuristics are always, they just seem to
suck.
They suck. heuristics within a system that has 12 variables is potentially useful. With every additional variable, you just increase the size of the set, you know, just exponentially, and so it quickly becomes where it's almost useless. It's sort of like those old Pandora algorithms, and I think they all kind of do this.
They had the Musicule. What was their special sauce they had? They had a name for that. Forget what that was.
Remember.
They had some DNA of music that they came up with some parameters somehow.
Yeah, and it would tell you, like, we're recommending this because it has these qualities, which also match this other thing you said you liked. It was like real chatty, telling you why it was giving you. And I always remember thinking, oh, well, that doesn't work for me, because it would always recommend the example in my case was I'm a huge Rush fan, and it would always recommend King's X. Do you remember them?
Mm-hmm.
That band? It was like, we're going to recommend King's X because you like progressive rock trios with prominent bass players. And it's like, yeah, but I don't like King's X. And yes, all the parameters fit, but I just don't like that band. I'm sorry.
they kind of suck. Yeah, it's not what I'm looking for.
It's not my thing, you know? And it's well, why? Well, I don't know. It's just not. It's not for an intangible reason I can't describe to you.
Right.
It's like, because you can imagine that that a recommendation engine of that type would be like, you listen to No Agenda? You would like, and 90% of it is going to be, no, I don't want that. I don't want that.
Unless we have the user feedback, that we can make those backlinks. Like you listen to No Agenda, and you might like Planet Rage because there's a high correlation between those two of people listening to both.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. And then, or you listen to No Agenda, you would like, who's the, who was that guy that did Bitcoin for a while? The white.
Which one?
No, you remember his brother is like real annoying, know it all.
I'm drawing a blank.
who was that guy?
I don't know. Oh,
this is killing me now. His brother's.
Let's ask the computer. Let's ask the robot.
Weinstein.
Oh, Weinstein. Brett Weinstein.
Yeah.
Brett and Eric. Yes.
The white Bitcoin guy. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Brett and Eric. Yeah.
Yes. And Heather.
Eric Weinstein is.
And Heather. Yeah. Yes, Heather. Yeah. I'm here on the Dark Horse podcast.
Dark Horse. That's it. I was, in my mind, I was thinking White Horse Inn, which used to be this apologetics podcast. But Dark Horse. It's like you would. No agenda person is going to want to listen to that show, but it would recommend it because
there's actually a high correlation between people who listen to No Agenda and the Dark Horse podcast.
Really?
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. Higher than you'd think.
There's also a
correlation to listen to Dave Smith. Oh, yeah.
That's annoying.
Well,
I want to thank James for a second for the work he's doing on Runway. Have you been following that at all?
Yes, I haven't used it, but I've been eagerly reading his posts.
There seems to be a bug in it, what I read today, but it's pretty cool.
How do I try it?
You need the Strike wallet.
Yeah, I've got that.
Okay, then you go to dashboard.strike.me and you get an API key, and then you go to podnews.net/runway. You create an API key, obviously just read only, not like make transactions. Duh. And then you click the button and it brings in your transactions and it shows you it has metadata. I think he's proxying from some of the apps, like maybe Fountain. I'm not quite sure. Not everyone's doing the same format, but it really works. And it shows you the Boostagram data, and it shows you the original amount. And I wonder if he's vibe coding it. I have a feeling he may be, but it's cool.
It's in local storage, right?
Yes.
In the browser.
Yes.
Does it take a while to build?
No. Oh. I mean, I have a lot of transactions. Let me see. Actually, I could take a look at it now. There we go. Runway. Let me get my, where's my key? Let me see. James. Where's James? Here we go. Yes, I have my key. Okay.
Runway. Okay.
Yeah, helipad, just runway. Got, yeah, it's cute. Okay. It's super cute. Yeah. All right. Store. All right. Fetch latest payments. 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000.
You got a lot of long
last time. Well, I do. I have a lot of, Oh, here we go. Getting 100, 200. Boom. There it is. You can say, okay, you have filters, so you can say show boosts only. Click on that. And here we go. Payment details. Salty Crayon using Podcast Guru. Howdy, Dave and Adam. Congrats on 250 episodes of JSON's TLV records, pinging the Pongs, Key Send, and LNURL Madness. We're still, we'd still be writing blogs without podcasting 2.0. And then he has a delimiter from more than 7 days ago. It's really quite spectacular.
Cool.
Yeah. And show all.
Good job, James. This is nice.
It's super nice. Especially because the main thing is it shows the full amount. Uh-huh. So what you receive, because I only have a 1% split on this. So I get one sat, but I can see it's 50 sats from Nicholas_B58@fountain.fm.
Well, I think if you have it all in local storage, you should be able to, it should be persistent.
I think so.
It's probably not persistent on mobile. I think they have different requirements, but on a regular desktop browser, it
works great. I mean, I hadn't even put it on this browser yet. And so I just did that live. I did it live in real time. And there's a CSV export. Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
The only one he had trouble with, I think, was Podcast Guru. And if I'm not mistaken, I saw Jason come back and say he would work on changing the format.
Yeah. So it's helipad for Strike.
That's great.
Yeah, it is. The fact that James is doing it is kind of interesting. Like, oh, James just got riled up all of a sudden about this. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, it's really good to see some movement on that direction. Cause I feel like we're languishing here with the value for value.
Well, don't look at Chad F then.
Yeah. I don't know.
The thing that's kind of sad, and you and I were talking about this the other day. The thing that's sad is Wavelake.
I think it just got overrun.
They've just been inundated with slop, you know, and then of course, why wouldn't you? Hey, I can put some slop on there and get some sats. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a problem. And it's in general, the music industry in general, but that's just like, that's so sad.
I guess what I mean by languishing is like the everything seems to have the switch over from Keysend to Bolt 11 invoices. It feels like it made everything a lot harder. You know, and so it's like when there was this one API, you know, Albi.
Sure.
That was supporting everybody. Where it's like, oh, here's an API, write to it, done. So, but now people are having to work harder, and that usually means there's a lot of drop off. Mm-hmm. So it's really good, like seeing Chad F and James and everybody, seeing everybody do these things, like step up and write code and that kind of thing. That's great.
Yeah, look at this.
And Oscar's still, you know, he's still doing his thing.
I got payments last updated February 13th, 141 total payments. Analyze mm-hmm. 500 last 7 days total payments before splits, and it gives me a total sat streamed before splits. This is nice. This is really good. This is quite amazing.
Yeah, Eric PP said it's all. He said Keysend made it easy, and now you have to store the boost info somewhere. But it's all starting to work.
It is. This is what I'm seeing exactly. It's starting to come together.
There was a dip as just everybody had to readjust, and then, you know, Chad and people are doing, they're pushing through the dip,
mm-hmm. pushing through the wall of fatigue.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so it's like, cause I think there was a general feeling of, really whole thing was, we had it baked and now it's like, yes. We gotta start over.
Well, this is getting exciting. This is really getting mm-hmm. exciting again. I don't see the one coming in from True Fans.
Yeah, it does remind me of Conshacks.
Oh, gosh, I forgot about them. Yeah, Conshacks. So many people have come and gone, man. So many people.
Build the dip. Yeah, build the dip.
Build the dip. I like that, too. Build the dip. Wow.
Did you see how high Inception Point was in that report?
Oh, number one, baby.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just pumping it. You know, they're doing traffic reports now.
Well, as I was looking through your list here, I saw, and this is kind of interesting. What was it that I saw? Let me see. Chicago Safety Brief. Uh-huh. I can see where that might be. So Chicago Safety Brief, Chicago Energy Report. You know, but I can see where that might not be a horrible thing to have in the morning. Just the, I don't know how long it is. Let me see. But these are not linked, obviously. Let me take a look in the index. Thank you, by the way, for fixing the search.
Are you good now?
Yeah. Yeah. That was weird. I'm like, I can't find this podcast I'm looking for. It's giving me all kinds of other stuff. Here, let's see the Chicago Safety Brief. Let's listen and see what this is. Okay, here we go.
Chats. Good morning, Chicago. Ads. Here's your safety brief for February 12th, 2026. Overnight, local authorities responded to one incident across the metro area. No major emergencies reported.
It's 40 seconds long. I can see that as being something I'd subscribe to.
No ads?
I did not get an ad, no. It's by Inception Point AI.
Good morning, Chicago.
No ads. Well. Interesting. That's interesting. No ads.
I'm not sure how prescient of a traffic report is in your podcast app. I mean,
well, I
change minute by minute.
Right. But, you know, in the morning, I look at my most recent in Godcaster, and there's SRN News, Fox News, Pastor Jimmy's devotional, Pod News. These are all very short things that I just hit play and it just runs through them while I'm taking a shower. Sorry for the mm-hmm. visual. And it's like, yeah, I wouldn't mind listening if there was a local Fredericksburg, you know, overnight police report or traffic report. I'd probably put that in there. I mean, this is not the best AI voice I've heard, but nothing that, that Chinese thing, Qui TTS, Qui 3 TTS.
Oh, Quinn.
Quinn. Yeah. I'm going to Qui Quinn, whatever. You know, I can, that's not, that's valid to me.
You don't think so?
I'm sorry. I got distracted because everybody's, I'm seeing now people are saying that there's, that we're not, they didn't get the live pod ping. Did we not?
I hit it. I hit it. I hit it. I hit it. Yeah. I hit the live pod ping. I remember doing it. I did it, 12:25. So who's saying they didn't get it?
Oh, let's see. Justin at Transistor said he didn't get it.
Hmm.
Trying to listen live for the first time, I clicked through on your link and went to the True Fans and Fountain pages on the web. No live indicator.
Hmm. I definitely hit it.
Is it a True Fans problem, maybe?
I don't know.
See. I've done a manual refresh of the RSS feed, Sam said, and we are not seeing any PodPink update for Podcasting 2.0.
Hmm. Well, look at my feed, baby.
Okay.
Huh. I hate it when that happens.
Podcasting
2.0. All right. Let me look at the feed. Where the feed at? Here we go. Feed.
Yeah, well, there was a pod ping that went out. I see the live bot, podcast mm-hmm. live bot mm-hmm. posted it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at the feed.
Are we not working? And
yes, status equals live. Yeah.
Let me check Castomatic here live. Yeah, we're live in Castomatic.
Yeah. Suck it. Suck it, True Fans. Suck it.
Status equals live.
We're good.
We're live,
I don't know,
man. Justin.
I don't know what happened, but okay. It eventually. Seth said it eventually worked. Just very delayed, about an hour late. An hour late.
Hmm. That's interesting.
For the pod ping, it went out. I show that the pod ping podcast live. So podcast live at podcastindex.social is Spurlock's
live bot. Yeah.
That whenever there's a pod ping that goes out, a live pod ping, he posts it mm-hmm. through that bot and it posted at 12:26.
Yeah. There you go.
So that's immediate.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's amazing any of this crap works at all, Dave.
Yes.
It truly is.
By the way, Eric PP did something very cool on the website, on the Podcast Index website.
Mm-hmm.
He implemented a proof of work defense.
Ooh.
Against scrapers.
And is that something I can see?
No.
Okay.
So what it is, the website has always been a weak point for us on the API because the website itself uses the API.
For adding a podcast, you mean?
Well, not just for that, but for it uses it for to get all of its data.
Uh-huh.
And sure. because it's using that, what it means is somebody can scrape
And use the API
without having an API key.
Right.
So they're just doing HTML scraping. Essentially, or calling the raw.
SecOps.
Call out the purple team. And so what he did was he added whenever there's an API call that happens. So whenever the main page calls one of the API back end, it uses a JavaScript to make the browser do a proof of work calculation first, and you can set the difficulty to how high you want it to be. And then it has to find the solution to the POW problem and include the solution in its call.
Oh, interesting.
And so it slows down the site
a little bit,
very slightly. Yeah. But it's going to overall serve to throttle the traffic coming from the website
bots scraping bots. Yes. Nice.
Yeah, yeah. It's really cool. Him and David Marzal are doing they're doing tons of stuff on the website, and it's awesome. Mm. So that I'm very appreciative to them for doing that, for maintaining the website and keeping it going.
Keeping it running, and, baby. Yeah. Keeping it running. Yeah. Yes. Shall we thank a few people?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Kick it off right away with Lyceum. That's Martin Lindiscoe coming in from True Fans. Rove Ducks, 2222. And, you know, I actually got my... Actually got my ducks back. There you go. Late to the game. I'm glad that Sam could fix the live stream manually. Friday fun, grocery shopping, and sushi takeaway. And listening to you guys. Ducks in a row. There you go. Coming in from Podcast Guru, 2,500 sats from Salty Crayon. Howdy, Dave and Adam. Congrats on two. I read this one earlier from the runway. Congrats on 250 episodes of JSON's TLV Records, Pinging the Pong, Key Send, and Ellen URL Madness. We'd still be writing blogs without podcasting 2.0. I don't know about that. Appreciate the sentiment. and I think that's it. The next one I have is Chad F. from 5 days ago. So that's probably in your rundown.
Let's see. I've got, for some reason, when I pulled the...
While you're looking, I will explain a few things. One, this is a value for value project. The podcast is just the funnel of the project. This is where we suck people in who want to come in and hang out, develop, make podcasting better, extend it, do whatever you want. This is just a crazy jam that we have every single week. We call it the board meeting. Your value for value support supports directly and only the podcast index. To keep the machines running, keep enough running so that if anyone just stops supporting us, we can go for another year or two, maybe a little longer, depending on how lean we run it. But it does go directly to making everything run. And we appreciate all of the support that everybody gives. We had a huge node issue few days ago. Yeah. And thank you to Graham over at Voltage, the man who literally never sleeps. Like I get a ping from you like, hey, is the node broken? And I don't even go look anymore. I just like, Graham, the node's broken. Boom. Oh, let me take a look. I'm in it. Thing was restarting and rebooting for 36 hours probably.
Yeah, it was bad.
What was the problem? Bad. First of all, it's because we have, our node is just bigger than most guys' node. Let's be honest about it. We got a huge node and we're pretty proud of it. All the ladies go, "Woo! Look at that node."
People can't handle our node.
No, they can't. But was it breaking because of your script trying to drag stuff out? That's what was happening. I figured that's what it was.
Well, I use Boz, Balance of Satoshis. Mm-hmm. I use that to export all the transactions for the year for taxes.
Yeah.
And it's always worked in the past, but then, last year I had a lot of trouble with it, and I had to, Alex Bosworth had to put in an extra command line argument just to support basically us. Mm-hmm. Because what you could do is you could do it by year and by month, but then the month was still too much. It was still causing too much memory usage. And so we had to do it down to like you could add the day also. So I had to go like day by day.
Oh no.
Yes.
Yeah. That's, and, it's a lot of days.
So I still have the script from last year, and I just bumped the number up to 2025 and ran it again. And I just left to go to the office, and then like, by lunchtime, I was getting messages that the node was down.
Whoops.
And then the next day, we got it back up and running. And then the next day, I tried to run the script again, and it crashed the node again. And we just got so many transactions that we can't handle it.
We can't suck anything out of our node.
So the node, the LND uses I think it's a Go language native a key value store called Bbolt. Mm. And it's not a true database, according to Graham. It's just more of like a big key value store. Oof. I guess maybe like Mongo kind of.
Yeah.
but it's meant for like built in library inside a small app. It was never really intended to be able to use it at this scale that we're using it at. Mm. And so that's why the LND project has undergone this massive transition to SQLite.
Oh, I didn't realize they were doing that. Oh, okay.
Yes. It's going to take forever to finish this. I mean, like they're transitioning like one table at a time over a period of, you know, probably a couple of years. Mm. And so but that doesn't help us because we're not there yet. And so what Graham ended up ultimately having to do was he just sent me the raw channels.db and
here
it was 40 gigabytes.
Deal with it.
40 gigabytes.
How did he send that to you? Email?
Yeah. He sent me an object storage link and I downloaded it and I vibe coded a transaction extractor out of
nice.
in about 45 minutes. And so I just extracted the raw transactions right out of the Bebolt database.
This kind of blows away your whole argument for the first half of the show. You love it. I know you love it.
You are characterizing my argument as an anti-AI coding argument. No. And that is not what it was.
No, 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 no. But did you get dopaminergic? What was it?
Dopaminergic response.
Dopaminergic response. Yes.
I did in my pants.
Dopaminergic. I got to write this down.
Dopaminergic.
With an N? Dopaminergic. Okay.
Yeah, like nerd, but okay. Nerge.
Dopa. Is it ma-nergic?
Dopa. D-O-P-A-M-I-N.
Yeah. Oh, M-I-N. Dopaminergic.
E-R-G-I-C. Yes.
I'm going to use this. I'm going to use this in my everyday parlance. Okay. You're getting a real you're getting a real dopaminergic response from that doom scrolling you're doing, baby.
I feel like you can weave that into
anything
to the Valentine's Day dinner with Tina.
Pastor Jimmy should do it in the service on Sunday.
I believe in you. I believe this is possible.
No, I'm sorry if you got that impression.
I do not want to give that impression because that's not how I feel, but I think there are concerns that we just have not fully unearthed yet.
Oh,
well, and it doesn't mean when we know the concerns that we'll stop using it. I mean, means that we have to figure it out.
Well, you always have to remember one thing. Let me see if I can find it. Yes. That's all you need to remember.
True.
We're all going to die. We're all going to die no matter what. Yes.
What was I even doing?
We were going to thank some people.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
And you were complaining about your thing didn't extract right or whatever. I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't get everything out of my node. Sterling Ellsworth. Oh, we got some PayPals here. These are all mixed up. Sterling Ellsworth, $22.20. And his note just says Sir Sterling.
Oh, Sir Sterling. Thank you.
Boost. Kevin Bay, $5. Thank you, Kevin. Cameron Rose, $25. Thank you, Cameron. We've got a new monthly donor, the Content Creators Accountant.
Oh.
$50 a month.
Ooh, thank you.
I get boosts whenever there's a boost nearby.
Yeah.
Thank you, Content Creators.
You can tell I've been working on my cart wall.
Yeah, you've been spicing it up a little bit.
Yeah, I found all kinds of stuff. Like, I should add this. I put this in. This is great. Yeah.
Martin Lindeskog, New Media, $1.
Thank you.
Brendan at PodPage, $25. Thank you, Brendan.
Very nice.
Oh, look, there's Oscar Mary, $200.
Bam.
Baller, shot caller, 20-inch blaze on the Impala.
Thank you, Oscar, and the boys over there at Fountain. Fountain app and hosting.
There's no girls at Fountain, right?
No, that's complete. The girls suck is on the door with the S backwards.
Okay. Go away.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph Maraca, $5. Podverse, that's Mitch and Creon. And Kyle, his brother, $50.
Thank you. Beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Lauren Ball. Hey, Lauren. $24.20 as usual. Thank you, Lauren. Appreciate it.
Lovely.
Christopher Harbarek, $10. Hey, Christopher. Thank you for that. Mitch coming in solo with a $10. Thank
nice.
Boost.
Oh, Harry. Okay, we got a one-off $50 from Harry at Lower Street. That's Harry at Lower Street.
Lower Street.
Boostagram.
In the house. Thank you.
And he says, I've started using the API. Thank you for it. You deserve some reward for creating something great for free.
It's called value for value. Welcome to the party, brother. Value Thank you, Harry. For value. Appreciate you. Yes.
Terry Keller, $5. Chris Cowan, $5. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Terry. Silicon Florist, $10.
Silicon Florist. I love these names. These names are good names. Good names.
Paul Saltzman. Yeah. Guess how much? $22. It's
always 22. Yeah, it's actually a row of ducks is what he brings. Yep.
Damon Kasajak, $15. Derek J. Visker, the best name in podcasting, $21. And we've got one boostergram that I can find.
Wait,
and that's the delimiter. But I think I see a problem here.
Well,
and
I see. Let me see what I see. I see from Castomatic 333 from Chad F, and that's an NWC test.
Okay.
Network Wallet Connect. And then I see, and yes, and then
Did
I
see one from CLOS?
CLOS. Let me do a little search.
He said, okay, so my fountain didn't even go through.
This is January 30th. Yeah. Test from True Fans.
And he had one from Fountain.
Yes, Fountain. This is an old one.
I'm going to have to use Runway. We're missing Boost. I'm
telling you, Runway's the way to go, baby.
I'm going to start using Runway.
Well,
Eric PP could add Runway to
add it to Helipad.
To Helipad. Yeah,
yeah, just a new page. And an extra setting.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's just vibe. Yeah, it's just
vibe, 5 minutes. Vibe coded. Just vibe coded, baby. Vibe coded.
But we do have a delimiter, though.
Yes.
Boostergram. 23,000 sats from Comic Strip Blogger.
Ooh, nice. Thank you.
Through Fountain, he says, howdy, Dave and Adam. Today, I'd like to recommend a plastic fantastic podcast called Sans Stormcast, a cybersecurity podcast that Dave is listening to himself. It's a short and published on workdays. Dave, please elaborate why it's worth subscribing to. Aha, I like it. Just search for Sans Stormcast in your podcasting 2.0 apps. Yo, CSB, AI Arch Wizard.
He is the AI Arch Wizard. And Justin, 3333 from Eric PP.
Thank you.
Coming in from CurioCaster. So next week.
Yes.
I don't think I can do the board meeting because I'll be traveling back from Nashville. From the NRB.
NRB.
The NRB, yes, National Religious Broadcasters Conference, where I'll be speaking about the future of podcasting.
And you know what we ought to do is we ought to have Gordon come in the boardroom at some point.
Well, he's going to be there with me. But yes.
Yeah, no, I mean like sometime after NRB. Like not, yeah, not
absolutely.
During.
Absolutely. I know he's a listener. Mm-hmm. And he's always like, I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Well, we don't either. So
that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of it. All right, boardroom. Thank you all very much for being here. Dave, good to talk to you. I miss talking to you last week.
I do too, brother.
Because we don't really get to speak except during these meetings. And this is what we talk about anyway, because we are all about podcasting. No matter what, it's always about podcasting. All right, everybody, have yourselves a great weekend, and we'll be back in 2 weeks, but I'm sure we'll see each other on podcastindex.social. Until then, we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting!
Busted a grumpy.